Happy Monday, or whenever you are listening to this, it is Perez, and thank you for joining me on Perez Chats, where I chat with some fabulous people. And this week, we are truly speaking with an icon, one of the most famous redheads on the planet. And no, I'm not talking about Prince Harry. I'm talking about Carrot Top. The comedian has been working for decades, since the 80s. I got to see his show recently in Las Vegas, and I loved it. I had so many questions for him, and we had a great chat. Not talking only about Vegas and his show, but we also spoke about Betty White, him working with her, and so much more. It's really a wonderful conversation. I hope you enjoy it and tell your friends about it.
I would say that there's probably a lot of similarities between us, but one of them is, you know, I've got this alter ego of Perez Hilton, and who I am in real life is different from that. There's similarities and crossovers, but is the private Carrot Top much different from the public persona that you're known as?
Well, I'm a very low-key, kind of boring person. I mean, there's, you know, on stage, it's wild, crazy guy, and I come home by myself, and I watch TV and go to bed and play with my dog. So there's definitely, I mean, there's still, like you said, similarities. I'm pretty energetic going guy, but, you know, years ago, they were trying to do like a reality show with me, and they came out for a week, and at the end of it, they said, we have to be brutally honest with you. It's not like we don't like you, but there's no drama. There's nothing that really, you know, they need a fight. They need drugs. They need something. And I'm just this boring dude, and I can't really do a reality show.
I think I'm boring too. And then people scratch their heads when I say that.
Yeah.
I'm a father of three. My life is about my kids.
Yeah, I know. I follow you all your posts. Your kids are beautiful. And I love that you have them always involved with everything you do. It's great.
Thank you. So I would say maybe it's 50-50 with me. Like, some of my friends call me Perez, and then some of them call me Mario. I think most of your friends call you Scott, which is your legal name, or does anybody call you CT or Carrot Top? Or
yeah, I mean, Chris Rock calls me Top, you know.
Top. I like that.
Yeah, my grandmother used to call me Carrot Top, and I used to find that really creepy. I'd say, "Grandma, it's Scott." Oh, it was the weirdest thing ever. She'd go, "Carrot Top, are you going to join with us for lunch?" I'm like, "I'm Scott, Grandma." But yeah, most people, you know, call me Scott, and now, and of course, now with social media, and not just that, but, you know, your phone. I'll be at a restaurant. Back in the day, you'd be at a restaurant, someone would say, "Scott," you'd think, "Oh, they know me," you know, and now they'd walk over and say, "Scott," right? And then I go, "Do it." "Oh, yeah. They look me up," you know, kind of thing. but most people, yeah, my friends, hopefully they call me Scott. Yeah. But yeah, some people call me CT, but yeah.
I like that. I saw your show recently in Vegas.
Yes.
You live in Vegas a lot of the time, and you also have a house in Florida. Your show that you've been doing here in Vegas has been running, you said, I think 20 years or over 20 years?
At the Luxor, 16, coming up in 17. Yeah, but prior to that, we're at the MGM for a good 10. So I've been 20-something here, yeah.
20-something years, wow. Yeah. And at the current hotel, over 15.
Yeah, 16.
Yeah. So, you know, Vegas is all about money, making money. And a show is only going to run that long if it's making money. So what's the key? What do you attribute having such a long running successful show in Vegas too?
I wish I knew the actual answer to that. I mean, there's got to be a whole bunch of different variables that go into play. One, I do try to keep the show new and fresh. There's always new stuff. It's kind of a fun show. There's music and there's, you know, it's comedy. It's lighthearted. It's a little edgy.
I was surprised by that. It is.
Yeah.
Maybe even more than a little. I would say it's it's not super edgy, but it's medium edgy. Like, I liked that it was edgy. That was awesome.
I think it's kind of cool without being too, you know, it's too gross as night. I mean, no one wants to go to a show and just like, okay, it's all about being just too gross. So there's a little charm to it, but how you do the off color kind of humor. In fact, one time I did a show at a state fair, and this is when I had to do G-rated. And the lady said, you know, it was great. And when he did go a little bit off color, it came across cute in a sense of how I delivered it, I guess. So there's something there. But yeah, I think just I've been very blessed to have, I guess, fans that keep coming back because, you know, if it was like you set it up, I don't think if people weren't coming, I probably still wouldn't have the show. So it's great that people still come. And it's fun for me at this stage because I'm kind of having more fun than I did when I was early, younger, because I didn't really know, not that I know what I'm doing now, but it's a little more comfort level of what I do on stage now.
I think perhaps one of the secrets is word of mouth, because I love Las Vegas so much. Actually, it's all tied together. I texted you earlier that I'm one of your top fans on Facebook. And I'm old, so I use Facebook still as well as everything else. I'm on all social media, but on Facebook, not that new, but one of the things that they do on Facebook that sets it apart from other social media is they have groups. So I belong to two or three Las Vegas groups, because I want to know what people are saying about Vegas and tips and tricks and whatever. And your show has come up on those groups repeatedly. People asking, is the Carrot Top show good? Should I take my kids to see? And like every comment I see is a positive comment. People have seen your show and really like your show. So you really are a Las Vegas icon, an institution. Sweet. You're a landmark.
That just means I'm old, like you said.
I'm old as well. What is it like living here? Like, how do you experience life as a local? Do they treat you differently here? Are you able to be normal here?
They treat me like anywhere else. I mean, that's one thing I love about it. This town has been beyond gracious to me and open arms and had me, you know, letting me do my show all these years. But you know, when I go out on the strip, or I go down, like I live out west, if I go out, you know, in Summerlin area or wherever, I've been here so long, people, you know, don't care, like, hey Scott, you know. but you still get some people that might, you know, that'd be like, there's always one guy that asks me the same thing every day. Hey, you got a show tonight? And yeah, show tonight. It's like every night. Yeah. You still working? It's still working. Yeah. You back up again? Yeah, back up again. Yeah. I think that's another thing that people ask a lot, which is weird to me. They always say that, is the show back up and running? I think they still think that COVID has shut down. And I'm like, we've been back for close to 2 years. I think I was the very first show to come back on the strip, because I didn't have a group on stage. I didn't have dancers. In my head, I have dancers on stage, but so it's nice. I could just do the show, but it was weird because they only allowed 50 people into a 2,000 seat theater. It was the old Criss Angel Theater. So it was very hard to come out with my opening line was, I have more props than people. And it was true. You know, the crowd felt for you too, because they're looking around spaced out. You know, 50 people in a 2,000 seat room. So,
but I'm sure those people were grateful that there was something to do that could be there with you.
And the actually, love was great.
You don't have dancers, but you kind of are a dancer. Like your show features choreography.
Yeah.
And really timed very well.
Yeah.
Actually, I was wondering about that. That there's a few segments where is a sound engineer playing things live, or is it pre-recorded and you're really that precise?
I wish it would. No, it's live in a sense of there's a guy up there doing it. Yeah.
Oh wow.
I will say one thing about my own show. That's the one thing that everyone comments on, is they say, how do you keep the sound effects and you together? Like, who's doing that? And so yeah, this John is up there literally like just following me. And if I go this way, he'll know that I'm going to go, you know, talk about sports or talk about something topical with the soccer was in town. And then my other guy, Justin's doing all the video stuff on the wall behind me. So it's all kind of a dance together, where when it works, it's beautiful. When it doesn't work, there's been nights we come off like we were all off.
So if John takes vacation, he doesn't take vacation.
No, none of my they work. No, we all have the same. We have a pretty nice.
You all take vacation to get at the same time.
On average, they have a great. I think they have a pretty few. But we do about 3 weeks on, week off. 3 weeks on, 1 week off. Sometimes four. It varies. But we also go on the road. We do some road shows too. So we kind of mix it up.
And actually, one of the things, because I like to do my research, if you want to see the Carrot Top Spectacular at the Luxor, buy your tickets in advance, because I saw, I think it was Ticketmaster or whatever the ticketing website, the show sells very well and in advance. So don't try to get tickets like the day of, I would say. So to do that.
I got mine today. I just got mine today for tonight.
Do you ever, I mean, I would imagine you're a chill guy, but sometimes you just want to be like incognito, but your hair is so recognizable. Do you ever just like hide your hair when you really
I do. I wear a beanie cap or something, and then I look like Justin Bieber. No, I don't. I was out in Aspen, and it's the weirdest thing. Shania Twain of all, but I don't name drop much, but she was having a vacation. And I was in, and I said, where are, she said, I'm in Aspen. I said, I'm in Aspen. So we went out for dinner and everybody was coming up to me, da, 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 just like nonstop. And she's like, well, why don't you just wear a hat? Like, and I like, I do have a hat on. I had like a beanie hat. And she was like frustrated that it was just so much attention. I said, they know my mouth. They know my face. They know, I don't know. I have a very sexy voice. That's what it is.
Yeah. One of the things that surprised that I did not know in your show, you revealed that you went to college and got a degree in marketing.
Yes.
And somehow ended up doing stand up. Do you apply any of that marketing background to?
Oh, absolutely.
Your show or doing it, like, and if so, how?
Well, absolutely. Even to this day, the marketing, the all the campaign that we put advertisement together, it's everything I've ever come up with. It's all my logos, my idea of what the brand is. But I think more importantly, and I think this is kind of cool, is when I first started, I mean, literally 37 years ago or something, when on the comedy club, they, as you know, back in the young comics, they have like 25 comics or more in a night. They all come up and do their thing. And then the next one, it would go on till midnight, 2 a.m. So when I would go up, I'd have my little prop trunk in the back of it. It said Carrot Top. So there's already marketing, right? There's already a name. So when people leave the club, they say, who'd you see? I saw a guy named Carrot Top because they were seeing it. Now I would even make a joke. I said, if you're enjoying the show, it's Carrot Top. If you're not, I'd rip it off. Like, you know. But
that's interesting. It reminds me of my early days when I started to doodle on photos. It was a marketing thing for me.
Absolutely.
If I doodled on the photos, anytime somebody shared them, they knew where it came from.
Yeah, exactly. I thought of that when I was a child. I mean, my favorite class was always show and tell, because you could not pay attention because it's show and tell. They're showing you things and telling you things. And that's kind of like I would say my show is kind of like show and tell, but with liquor. So the crowds, you know, they're looking and seeing stuff the whole night.
When did you first become interested in stand-up? Was it high school? Was it college? Was it afterwards?
Oh, it was when I was like 8. Yeah. I was
when you were 8. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Who did you look up to in that world?
Everyone from like Richard Pryor, George Carlin, Jonathan Winters. I mean, you name it. All of course, now they're, you know, they're gone. But, they're, you know, up to the next, you know, era of, like, you know, Gary Shandling and you name it. There's too many. I mean, Eddie Murphy, Chris Rock, Chappelle. And I always, but yeah, 8 years old when I wanted to do, it's just weird. I kind of tell that story on stage. And then I somehow got into high school when I was the class clown kind of thing. I used to write jokes. I didn't perform them because I didn't have a show, but I pretended I had a show. And I would perform in the campfire with all my friends. They would just sit there and I would hold court and I say, you know, and one of them happened at the beach at a bonfire. We were sitting around with about 20 kids. And the cop came down and says, you guys can't have a fire in the beach. And I said, why? He says, it's dangerous. I said, well, we're in the best place for it. We're next to two things that put fires out. We have water and sand. And where do we go? And my friend's like, that's funny. And the cop's like, that's not funny. Get out of here. But that was one of the first kind of observational kind of things that I would kind of like, that kind of joke writing where things in real life and you know, George Carlin was great at that. Because it was observational stuff that when you listen to, you go, oh my God, that happened to me today kind of thing.
And those are universal too, because everybody, like people go to the beach and they can relate to that.
Right, right, right. It's always good to have a little bit of clever and a little bit of stupidity at the same time, you know?
I was chatting with a comedian recently, Michael Yo, who maybe he's wrong, but he tells me that, which was shocking to me. I don't, maybe he's just saying this to make himself feel better. And I like Michael, but he said that on average, it takes a comedian 20 years to break. And, you know, I remember you and I've been following you for a long time. I don't think it took you 20 years to achieve success. What would you say was your breaking point, or the really instrumental moment that kind of thrust you and took you to another level early on in your career?
Well, Michael has a point about, I mean, it depends on the person and the act and everything. I mean, there's some comics that make it overnight on YouTube now. I mean, they get their followers and they're already selling out theaters. So it really depends. If you just strictly work in comedy clubs and doing the circuit, how I started. But I did the clubs, and then I got into this thing called NACA, and it's just big in my career. It's called National Association of College Activities.
Oh.
And I would go, we have to get invited, but you get invited to the NACA. There were conferences, you know, the South Conference, the West, and you perform in front of all the colleges. So all the buyers of the colleges were in the audience, and you go up and perform and do your 20 minutes. And then the colleges afterwards would either book you or not. So then I did really well with the college. Then they invited me to the national one in Dallas. And so this was the big one. This is like every school in the world. And I think I beat Harry Chapin's record. I don't know but when that happened, I'm like, I beat who? And they Harry Chapin. I'm like, Harry Chapin for the number of bookings. So I think I must have played, thousands of colleges. And wow. But it was weird. I'd do a lunchtime gig in a cafeteria. Then there'd be one, you know, the next night, that night, I'd get in the car and drive 5 hours after the lunch gig and do like, you know, the basketball arena, then get back in the car, go to the next college, do like a breezeway at lunchtime. And then next night you're in a theater. It was unbelievable. And that was such a weird, the theaters are all so different. So you're in a breezeway, like I'm a loser. And then 5 hours later, you're in a gymnasium with 5,000 kids screaming. So that helped me get a lot. It was kind of a grassroots kind of thing. Like I play all these colleges and colleges would all talk about it. And then I got on like the Tonight Show and like Regis and Kathy Lee. And when I did those shows, the parents would watch those and say, hey, this Carrot Top guy was great on the Regis show. And the kids would say, we saw him at our college. So I was getting, you know, 18-year-olds and 80-year-olds all kind of liking my act. So it was kind of a cool thing. Like
cross ages. Yeah. That's another cross, thing. Yeah. Yeah. Cross generation. You appeal to the masses. And actually so funny, a week ago, this is funny to me. My mother, she's Cuban. She was watching Spanish language television and Dennis the Menace with Betty White and you was on in Spanish. And I'm like, wait a minute. That's Carrot Top.
I'm probably funnier in Spanish, actually.
Do you have any recollection of Betty White? Any fond memory?
Oh my God, no. She was, and it was Don Rickles. I mean, there's one that's one going back to who I admired in comedy, and here I am in a movie with him. And I remember, never forget that I was in the trailer of Miami Morning, and I'd be getting my makeup put on, and Don Rickles is next to me, and Betty White's next to me. And it was a pinch me moment. You're like, oh my God, I'm sitting next to, you know, legends, literally.
Yeah.
And then, and this is funny. So I was doing the Tonight Show. I think it was one of the last ones. I think it was the last one Jay did. And he had me come out. It's like just a little quick thing. Like three of my greatest hits that I did. So, and Betty White was on there as well. So I go into the dressing room where she's getting her makeup, and she's getting her makeup. And I said, Betty, I don't want to bother you. But do you remember, this is great. I said, do you remember working with me in a movie? And she says, oh, I don't. And I said, oh, you don't remember? We did a movie. I said, great. We did a movie together. I said, I know. Don't panic. It was good. It was Dennis the Menace. You don't remember that? She goes, I don't remember ever making a movie with you or Dennis the Menace. I said, okay, it's okay. Yeah. It's like,
bless.
But, bless. But But it was great. She was just being honest. She's like, no, we did a movie together. She was so shocked. Like, what? Hair's out of here.
She'd been working for six decades that point.
Oh, no, for sure. No, she was very sweet, though. She held my hand. She goes, no, but I hope it was a good movie. And I said, no, it was great. Yeah. Don Rickles did it. And she's like, I was in a movie with Don Rickles? I said, yes. And it was great. Yeah.
We've got a new sponsor on the podcast this week, which I'm so happy about. Air Doctor. Have you heard of Air Doctor before? They are an EPA indoor cleaning device.
Wow, an air purifier. Wow.
Yeah. Air Doctor filter. The device filters out dangerous contaminants and allergens so your lungs don't have to. Air Doctor uses an ultra HEPA filter that's been independently tested to remove 99.99% of tested bacterias and viruses. And here in Vegas, like, they're constructing so much, and I don't think there's really good air quality here. Plus also it's so dry. So it's nice to have just cleaner air that helps circulate the air as well. That's also important. Right now, Air Doctor 2000 is the first affordable purifier that not only removes virtually 100% of airborne particles, but also the vast majority of toxic ozone, volatile organic compounds, and gas in indoor environments. Essentially, it's smaller but a still powerful Air Doctor. So head to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Perez. And depending on the model, you'll receive up to 35% off. You're saving 35% off. Lock this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code Perez. I made a cameo, not a cameo, it was like a small guest star on that Hot in Cleveland show that Betty was a part of. And I had met her once before. And my favorite memory of Betty White was I got hired to host a screening of The Proposal, that movie that she did with Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock. And it was a midday thing. Like, there was sunlight still out. And she said, let's go to the restaurant before the screening and have a cocktail. And she had herself a vodka something. I think it might've been vodka straight. Which I loved. Awesome. I loved that.
Yes, that's great. That's awesome.
You know, you mentioned on your show in Vegas that you had a bit of a moment with Rosie O'Donnell and she dissed you. We don't need to get into that, but
I just don't think she was a fan of mine. I think if we met again, I think she might be. It's just, you know,
I'm curious. Mm-hmm. What if any rapport or relationship you have with that fellow iconic comedian Gallagher?
Oh, we're actually friends.
There's no rivalry.
No, but there was. It was a rocky road. It was a but it would take 2 hours to get to it. But basically, in a sense, when I came on the scene, I had met him when I was a kid, and I would go backstage and like he would. I'm literally like in his dressing room. He would be going over his notes for the show, and I would sit there and learn and watch. And he'd say, you know, what's your joke? And I'd tell him one. And so I was really like one of my favorite moments in my life growing up watching Gallagher backstage. I went to Vegas once and saw him at the Sands, and he went backstage. And then all of a sudden, it's weird. All of a sudden, I start doing comedy, and that's when he just was like. What? I don't know. I thought it would have been a blessing because he's, you know, my guy, like
your comedy mentor, maybe.
Right. Your mentor. No, absolutely. Right. So you want, and I think he was just bummed that I'm on the Tonight Show. And he's like, you know, the Tonight Show won't book me. And I said, well, sorry. But he had a whole bunch of issues with me, I think, but we've come to a peace.
I love a happy ending.
Last time I spoke to him, he came to my show like three nights in a row and sat backstage and told me that I need to change everything in it. But other than that, we had a great time. He really did. Get rid of all the props, start over.
I randomly looked him up just to see what he was doing. And he seems semi-retired. Like he's doing some classes, like he's teaching people and this and that, but I'm happy to hear that the two of you are in a good space. I would imagine, yeah, you know, a show in Vegas is probably very different from a show that you take on the road, because the audiences, yeah, in Vegas are probably different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I would imagine the audiences in Vegas could get rowdier, drunker, crazier. What happened? How do you rein it in? Like, have you ever had to kick anybody out of your show?
Oh yes. Oh yes. Oh, yes. Wow. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's unfortunate, but yeah. So usually it's not in my hands. I'm just up there and my people and the ushers and the security will on their own. It depends on how many times someone chimes in, and depends what, you know, but yes, there's been a few. Back in the day when I first started, the Metro actually had to come in and like physically pick him up and drag him out because he wasn't gonna leave. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, this is just how a comedy show should be, right? Cops dragging people out of it was and then how do you get back on track, right? Everyone's watching the cop drag this guy out, and then I'm like, okay, thank God, you know, you got to make up something. Like, thank God my Uncle Bill's gone. Jesus, he's always panicking. You know, something to get out of it, but it's always awkward. Yeah. It's just so weird about comedy. Yeah, I was saying, different. It's not a movie. You don't go and it's live. It's happening. You know, you don't just, you know what I mean? Like in a movie theater, people scream at the screen, but the movie doesn't stop. In a comedy club, it's all put together for a performance. You know, it's like, so especially with plays and on Broadway,
But with comedy, audience participation, I think, is a part of it. But you don't want to cross that line,
exactly. Right? To a degree, there's. I mean, it's fun to have some, but when it goes on, I usually say, you know, I wrote this without you. I don't know if I need you. I'll because it's like I can't even get on my next thought because you're just babber. And I'm like, what do you want? So, but it usually, I mean, most of the time it's smooth sailing, but every comic has had, you know, every comics have had to have dealt with something like that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that surprised me when I saw your show here in Vegas is I was expecting it almost all to be props. And yeah. I love that, you know, we got that. That's what I was expecting, but it was not just that. And it was just great jokes and observational humor and a variety. And like I said, even some like, not dancing, but like, almost comedy dance like choreographed moments. Yeah. So there was a real variety and arc to what you did and do. And you were telling me that that's kind of been a newer thing, that it kind of used to be more prop heavy back in the day.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. Yeah. I think doing this so long, I've gotten into a little more comfort zone with just telling a story. There's a couple stories that I tell that it's dead silent until the punchline at the end. So it's really brave. You gotta stick with it because they're listening. It's good. But I never would do that before. It was always prop. And I was always afraid of a moment that they weren't laughing, that I thought I'd lost them and I wasn't doing well. And then I realized as I've gotten, you gotta have that little, not peaks and valleys per se, because you don't want valleys. You want a nice peak and then a little boop, but not a drop. But, yeah, the music thing at the end, the whole dancing and the choreograph thing, that literally, I used to do it when I was I shucked oysters when I was in college, and I would dance behind the bar. There's a jukebox. It's old. I am. It's a jukebox. And I would put in Aerosmith, all the songs that are my thing, Michael Jackson, Rolling Stones. And as I'm shucking oysters, I would, you know, do Mick Jagger and shucking oysters and moonwalk like Michael Jackson. And I take a little napkin and throw it up like confetti and stupid stuff. And then when I started putting my act together over the years, I said, I want to do something at the end. I don't want to be I was seeing comedy shows. They always just end with the guy like, end on a joke and say, you guys have been great. Thanks for coming. You know, if you've been drinking, don't drive. And the lights come up and the people walk out. So I want it to be like a concert. So when the show is over, yeah, you leave with this confetti in the air and the music's jamming and the fog machines and the strobe lights and the snow machines and everyone's, you know, dance. The last 10 minutes is just like a rock show. So they all get to, and they sing along to it. Last night they were all singing along to the songs. It was really, really, really cool. So
there's a lot of country music in it. You're a big country
fan. Yeah, I am. We had Tracy Lawrence came last night to the show, who was one of my all time favorites when I was growing up. So that was kind of cool doing like a little tribute to him. But yeah, my father of all things. When I was a kid, we didn't listen to country music, and I went off to college. He came home one day, and he was in cowboy boots and jamming country music, and I was like, Dad, like. Did my dad move out of here? Are you my dad? And he was like, yeah. I said, when did you make the switch? And he's like, full on just country guy. Got a big truck, country music. And that's when I started listening. I said, this is good music. And so I started following. Yeah, I love it. And then I became a legit country music fan. Like I
mainly prefer the females of country.
But yeah, well, Shania, yeah, there's so many.
There's some good guys too.
Yeah, I still like the old too. The old country, like, you know,
classic
George. Country. Yeah, George Jones and, you know, Willie and Waylon. Garth. That's just great. I did Alan Jackson. This is just too many to mention, but I like it all. I mean, the show is, there's a lot. I'm like Donnie Murray. I'm a little bit country and I'm a little bit rock and roll.
So a few years back, or I don't know exactly how long, you know, you were, not that you're out of shape now, but you got like incredibly buff. And I read somewhere recently that you decided to get less buff because that became a distraction to your comedy.
I think it did. I mean, I think so. I mean, it was two things. One, I've always been a skinny kid. Like I swam on the swim team and I wrestled like, you know, 110 pound division. And then I mean, I've always worked out though. My whole family, my mom, everyone would say, when did you start lifting weights? Oh God, when he's like 15. So what people just thought that I've always lifted. I used to bring weights on the road in my truck with my props. And then I got to Vegas and was bored, had nothing to do. And I had a friend that was really loving to go to the gym. So I said, I'll go with you. And all of a sudden I just got so into it. And then I was like,
when you were,
but it was not me. You know, it's just like really wasn't me. I was kind of like, yeah, I'm a runner, you know.
When you were at that point in your life, how much work did that take? Like how many hours daily to get to that? Like, because you were.
We would work out 2 hours, go eat, and then come back for another hour, literally.
So three hours a day?
Yeah. And trust me, I'm thinking back on it. I remember bitching about it then to him. I'm like, I'm not doing another hour. He said, yeah, you are. Now we're just going to do abs. Just abs for an hour. I said, okay. And then all of a sudden, one day I was in my warehouse. I was grabbing something. There's a photo of me. And I was like, am I that big? And they're like, yes, dude. And I just was like, I think I just quit cold turkey. I didn't just stop going to the gym. And I became, again, I used to always run, but now I just run. So I just like being lighter and leaner. And it fits good for the stage. I don't know.
Yeah. Amazing.
It's not my thing. It's not my thing.
All right, last question, because we said it would just be 30 minutes, and I'm mindful of your time. You know, as somebody who's been doing it for as long as you have, is there some advice you would give to a person who says, you know, I want to do comedy? Would you discourage them, or what advice would you give?
I would definitely not discourage them. I think that's what's great about anything in life, whatever you decide you want to be, whether it be a doctor, a lawyer, a comic, or an actor, or a musician. Because you think about how many the odds of you making it in any of those are going to be low. So people always say, oh, you know, it's a tough road to get. You're not going to be a comedian. You're not going to get well known. You're not going to get on TV. Well, that's everyone said that to me, and I'm just idiot me. So you just have to have your drive. You really, honestly, if you love it, I think that's the most important thing. You really have to love it. Like a lot of kids come up to me all the time and say, I want to be famous, right? And I say, famous for what? I don't know. I just want to be on TV and, you know, have nice cars and be on TV and be famous. I'm like, but you want to be famous for something? Like what would be your thing? And if with comedy, at least I think when I first started was trying to find what it is that was going to be, what were you going to do when you got up there? Like, just like you just talked about my show. So when they say, please welcome Carrot Top, when you walk up on stage, what's your thing? That's the first thing you have to figure out. What it is your voice? Are you going to do observational humor? Are you going to do political humor? Are you going to do visual humor? Are you going to do maybe a combination of all three?
When you started, how long did it take you from starting stand-up to you know, doing prop humor? Was it almost right away, or did it come after years?
No, not years. Kind of right away. I had I had gone up a couple times at the college and just done stand up, and just, I think I even did like George Carlin jokes and thing. And then I went to a comedy club in West Palm Beach, and I auditioned for their thing, and I did the exact same thing because it did so well in front of the college. I did George Carlin jokes, and the owner of the club came over, and she's like, what the F was that? Right. And I said, what? She said, that's George Carlin's jokes. I go, no, I know. I picked some good ones. She goes, no, you have to do your own jokes. And I went, I didn't know. I was like, I could just go up and tell jokes. That'd be my jokes. So that's when I went, oh crap. So I gotta figure out what's funny. And so I had this neighborhood crime watch sign in my dorm. And my friend and I were just sitting there, and he says, where'd you get that? And I said, I stole it. I said, how good is their crime watch? And then I'm watching their signs. And he said, that's funny. And I went, that is funny. So I went on stage with the sign, and I said, sorry, I'm late. I was in the neighborhood. It's a neighborhood crime watch. And then I did that joke. And then I'm watching their signs, and it killed. And the lady was like, that's great. Do you have more of that? And I said, no. She's like, I said, I can go steal more signs. And she said, okay. And I literally did. I went around town and I found all these funny signs. It was like there was one that said slow children at play, and the stick figure didn't have feet. And I said, well, no one of this slow, they don't have feet. And it would just kill. It was crime watch and the stop sign and one way road and the dead end street, something like that. And that's how it all started, with the signs. It was like a little slideshow of signs, local signs. And then the woman said, I love your style, and I like your wit. I love how you do it. I think you should do more of that visual stuff. And I said, okay. And then I remember the first one. I said, it was going to be, because I lived in Florida. It was a hat just like this. And it had an old lady's head on top of it on a spring. So old people's heads, you could see them above the seat when they're driving. And it killed. And then it became like, you know, it's Florida. And I do that and the crime watch thing. And then I just started coming up with hundreds of, you know, an ice tray with the levels, so you wouldn't spill the water. And I had a cowboy boot with a kickstand so rednecks wouldn't fall down. And all of a sudden, you just put together a whole routine. And yeah.
Then the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, one last question. Do you think things since you began have gotten better or worse, or they're just different for comedians?
Yeah, I wouldn't say better or worse, but I would absolutely say different. I mean, that's in all caps. I mean, there's nothing like the old days of doing comedy that you can do now. You still can push it a little bit, but man, I look back at the stuff I used to do on The Tonight Show, on Regis, and you couldn't do a third of that now, not even close, but it was so, everything was, I don't know, it's weird, right? It was just the mood of the world, the mood of the state of comedy was just, it was anything goes, it was comedy. Which is kind of unfortunate. I mean, yeah, there's some nights I'm up there. I'm like, man, that gets like a big ooh. I don't know why that gets an ooh. I did something the other night about Chris Rock. Not Chris Rock. I said
David LaChapelle.
Dave
Chappelle. Chappelle.
Because I used to think the same thing. I know Dave LaChapelle was Dave Chappelle. Done. no, but the when he slapped the guy. I do this joke about Dog the Bounty Hunter. It's a big joke and everyone laughs. And at the end, I said, then Will Smith came up and slaps me, and they have the sound effect. And last night I did it, and the whole crowd, they thought that, oh my God, like, and I was like, you can't reference that. And then I have a picture of me on screen where I put this makeup where it looks like I got slapped from him. I said, well, I met him. He was very nice to me, and shows the thing and it does the sound effect again. And they just don't know what to do. They're just beside themselves. They're like, I don't think I can laugh at that. You can laugh at it.
You can laugh at it. Well, yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, everybody, thank you.
Plan your trip to Vegas and make sure you catch Carrot Top at the Luxor. He's there indefinitely.
Yeah, thank you so much. And it's been a pleasure getting to know you. And thank you for coming to my show. And thanks for letting me be on your podcast and all your fans. Hopefully they enjoyed it. And yeah, very nice. Yeah.
And that's that, folks. Me and Carrot Top, share this episode, please. PerezPodcast.com. That's PerezPodcast.com. And a reminder, the Booker and Perez PHP show comes out every Wednesday right here on PerezPodcast.com.